This is a recording of Billy S. from Las Vegas, Nevada, the main speaker at the Saturday Night Banquet Speaker Meeting held at the 5th Annual Indian Wells Valley AA Roundup in Ridgecrest, California on Saturday, April 25th, 1992. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all AA speakers.
Mike Fulner, and I am an alcoholic. And it says to qualify. And I'm qualified to be here. I know that. And started drinking that I can remember when I was about 13 years old. Raised Catholic, I got confirmed, and my old man made up a punch. And I think I drank alcoholically from the beginning, seeing I put down as much as I could, as quickly as I could. I went to the room, it was spinning, I heaved all over the bedroom, and my dad was proud. His little boy had become a man. And that kind of helped me along the way. You know, I went through high school. I was drinking daily by the age of 15 or 16. My folks had a keg of beer on the back porch, and I was welcome to drink it any time I want, and I did. My dad used to complain that I drank it all, but that was okay. I joined the Navy. Did what I did in the Navy the best, and that was drink. My last 6 months of the Navy, I had a few captain's masks and did a few of the things I wasn't supposed to do. So they asked me to leave the Navy, and I did. I came to work here at the Naval Weapons Center. I got stationed here in 1975. I fell in love with the desert for a lot of the reasons that I've heard people talk about this place. You know, the friendliness. You know, the people here are friendly. And there's also a bunch of drunks. And you people were for me. This is where I belonged. I came to work here, and I almost lost my job a couple times here because of drinking. One time we were supposed to be up in the mountains doing work, and we went to Lone Pine instead, and government vehicle and all that good stuff, and come close to losing my job over that. During the course of this time, I met my wife. We've had a wonderful marriage. We met in a bar out here. We got married in a bar here. And we raised our kids in the American Legion. My kid's job in life was to bring Dad a beer. My oldest daughter, she babysat a lot. Consequently, my kids grew up in a pretty strange home environment. What happened for me was, I used all the drugs and the alcohol. I found a doctor that gave me a prescription of tranquilizers, and the prescription was take as needed, and I did, and I needed them often. And I did that for about probably 5 years, I believe. And one day the alcohol and the drugs just didn't work anymore. In fact, they started turning on me. I went into convulsions at 1:30 in the morning. And, I said that prayer I'd said so many times when I was leaning over the toilet bowl. God, get me out of this, and I'll never do it again. I promise. Just get me out of this. And that night there was a moment of clarity. And next morning I checked myself into EAP over on the base. And I got in there, and to make a long story short, ran into this little redheaded gal. Joanne, where are you? I know you're here somewhere. Raise your hand. Where are you? There she is, right back there. Little redheaded gal. I love her today. Back then, she was a bitch. She used to sit there and tell me, get a sponsor, go to meetings, get a sponsor, go to meetings. And I would show up at EAP, but I didn't want nothing to do with that Alcoholics Anonymous. And so finally I got tired of hearing her. Just to shut her up, I got a sponsor and I went to meetings. And there's a lot of people in here that are real close to my sobriety. Frank P. is here somewhere, and there he is, and he met me at the club for my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought I was in the middle of a shark attack. All these people, hi there, how you doing? All these smiles and stuff. I thought you were all Amway salesmen. And I got a sponsor, and he got me into service right away. And I'm real grateful for that. See, I didn't have to deal with my family while I was involved in service. And I've stayed involved in service, but I started dealing with my family a little more. We were sitting at the table this evening talking about families and how this disease creates dysfunctional families. And you know, there was a time that I had a daughter, my oldest daughter, run away a few times, and the police called up and said, "We have your daughter one more time." And I said, "Well, you guys can keep her." She'd run away so many times, and I was doing what you people taught me around here, the tough love stuff. And that was the hardest thing I could ever do. You know, Bill talked about it tonight, really did. And you know, he'd rather saw his arm off than do some of the tough love he's had to do. It was a real good analogy because I can relate to that. Today that same daughter brought us a grandbaby here, January 21st, and he's sitting right there. It's my little guy. His middle name's after me. We call him Mikey. You know, I've got a family that's just wonderful. They're all here tonight. My son's out there hiding around somewhere in his new social distortion shirt. He's real happy about that. Whoever they are. You know, and his girlfriend, you know, and he's 17, and, you know, he's doing real well in school. You know, a year ago he was not doing real well, and today he brings home report cards with A's and B's, and that's a direct result of this program. My life today is a direct result of this program. You know, I'm real grateful for everything I've got today. You know, sometimes I don't show it. I know my family will tell me that real quick, you know. It's a program family. I've got some Alateens and some people that are in program, and my little Alateen, Danielle, she's real quick to say, "Dad, don't you need a meeting?" And I usually get the one when she tells me. You know, my wife can tell me I don't listen to that because she's an alcoholic too, so. She doesn't know any better. So I'm just real grateful to be here tonight, and I made it through this thing, and I'm going to shut up and let Billy talk. So I'd like to introduce our speaker, Billy.
Looks like the committee did a hell of a job with decorating. I like the decorations. I was thinking to get a little bit better picture of Bill Wilson, though, you know. My name is Billy Smith, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm sober today through the grace of God. I always say that, and through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you look up the word grace, it means an unmerited favor from God. And that's what I've done. I've just been a drunk, and I was lucky enough to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I say through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I come out of a hospital in 1966, and the doctor says, "If you drink anymore, you're going to die." And I made up my mind that morning that I wasn't going to drink anymore, and I'll get into that later, and I'd return to do what I always do, and that's drink. I really want to thank all the people that's involved in these things. I'm a doer in AA. I don't know what kind of AA I am, but I am one. You know, and people say I sponsor a lot of people, and I don't know what kind of sponsor, but I am one, you know. And I'm a H and I, and anything else in Las Vegas, I am one. You know, I'm a part of AA, and the reason I'm telling you that, if you're new here, first 5 years, and you feel a little bit empty or something, and you still got this hole in your gut, I'm your man. You've heard three great speakers already. And Eddie told me to be sure to not goof this thing up, so I'm going to do my best not to. But I really want to thank the committee and for Bob and Nancy and for my good friends that came down with me and for Eddie for recommending me for this and for the basket that Pat sent. Let me tell you something. For a drunk, that's a fantastic thing to walk into a room and there's something like that. It makes you feel useful, like for the first time in your life, maybe you really are worth all these things that you see these other people, that you put your insides on their outsides, and maybe you are just a little bit like them. I'm going to tell you something about my childhood, and if I forgot to thank anybody, I want to thank them now. And so I'll tell you a little bit about childhood, and I'll tell you about the parts that had effect on me when I came in AA, because I think it's important. And my story is different from the other three people that you heard. I heard Sally today, and she was just fantastic. I heard a great message this afternoon in the Al-Anon about this disease, this family disease called alcoholism. It is the best I've heard described in a long time. And I'm going to tell you about, you know, there's all kinds of stories in the big book, and if you read the book, you'll probably find yours. I wouldn't do that for a long time. I was going to get this thing by osmosis. I was just going to hang around and all the good things was going to happen to me. And I can tell you they didn't. You know, but I was raised in North Carolina, and I was four boys in my family. And mine is the second story. After Bob's first story is Bill's, and after Bob's is about the attorney. And he said he had absolutely no reason to drink alcohol. And I had absolutely no reason to drink alcohol. I have never, ever seen my mother and father take a drink. I have never, ever seen my mother and father raise a hand to each other. Let me tell you about the big argument in my family. My mother and father was married 47 years when my father died. And I'll tell you about the one big argument I seen. I thought I was going to get to see what everybody else kept talking about. My father retired, and he told my mom to quit her job. And for the first time in my life, I heard my mother say, no. I said, this is it. I get to see what everybody else seen, you know. And my father says, fine. I'll pick you up in the morning, I'll take you to work in the morning, I'll pick you up at night. And she said, that'd be great. That was the end of that argument. So I never got to see what everybody else talked about. I've never had no incest or nothing. And when I got here, I thought that was one of the requirements that you had to go do them kind of things. So I really felt out of place in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but let me tell you about the family that I was raised in. And believe me, when I'm standing up here, the last thing I want to do is leave the stage and think I hurt anybody. So just, I'm telling you my story, and I don't want to change none of it, and I'm not here to hurt anybody, but if I change the one little thing in my story, I might miss the one person that I'm supposed to be here for. So I was raised in a very religious home in North Carolina. I'm talking religious. You Catholics have no idea what I'm talking about. Not the slightest. We don't go to movies. My mother's 78 years old. There is still not a television in her house. It's a sin to do that. They don't shave their arms. They don't cut their hair. They don't do nothing. And I always felt apart, away from this family. I'm the kind of guy that never could fit anywhere I was, even in this loving family. I felt different from. I'm not saying I'm born an alcoholic. I really don't know. I don't care how the mule got in the ditch. It don't make any difference. Let's just get him out. He's alcoholic. Let's quit worrying about how he became one. Let's just, you know, go and do the things we're supposed to do. So, in this family, and so I'm going to this church every Sunday that I have to go, and I have to go Wednesday night, and it's a thing that we had to do. I mean, it was like we don't say no in our family. You know, you just don't do that. And so I felt different, and I'm not sure what age it was. Maybe it was 12 or 13 years old or 14, that on Sunday morning every now and then there'd be somebody would stand up and make a commitment to this church, and for some reason one Sunday I stood up and didn't raise my hand and made a commitment to this thing, and you know, now you got all these rules you got to go by. And they told me about the seven heavens and the seven hills and all this kind of stuff. And if you don't do the things you're supposed to do, you don't get to go where they go. And so I lasted about a day and a half. You know, you can't go to movies and everything, and masturbation is completely out. So I didn't last very long, you know. And so now I'm walking around knowing that this God that these people are talking about is watching everything I was going to do. And I sort of, what I can tell you is, I don't know how to explain it other than I just sort of give up on life. It was like no matter what I was going to do, when I died, I was going down there. And so it didn't really make any difference for me to become an attorney or a lawyer or anything. My good friend of mine said, about guys like, he says, you know, Don, this friend of mine says, I just love Billy. Because him and I were the only ones who never had a plan. Everybody else was going to do something. Billy and I, we never had a plan. We just out there doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know. And it's so, I had these feelings of failure at no matter what I did. I went out for basketball in high school. I fell to third grade. I thought that was the worst thing in the world. I found out other people fell to other grades, you know. But for me, it was just devastating. If you're alcoholic, no matter what happens in your life, it seems like the worst thing in the world. And you're the only, and the way I felt was, when things happened to me, I'm the only one that it happened to. And I'm the only one that felt like that. Nobody knew how I felt, and I did not have the nerve. The fear of me telling you and you finding out how I felt just scared me to death. And I became the loneliest. Even a kid, I was a lonely kid. You know, so I went out for basketball, and the guy told me, I went up for football first, and the guy told me, he says, you're going to be a pretty good running back. And I lasted about 2 days, and I realized there's going to be a lot of work or something here, and I'm not going to be all state by the end of the week. So I said, you know, the heck with this. And so I went out with basketball, and the same thing, the guy said, you'll make a good, look like a pretty good guard, and the same thing, I just the kid that couldn't do anything. I just didn't have the heart. You know, I failed the grades, but I wouldn't take books home. I'm the guy outside the school shooting craps, pitching pennies, and making fun of the guys that's in there doing what they're supposed to be doing. I came in loud mouth, you know, to cover up these things inside of me. And I finally just quit school. It didn't seem like a good place for a guy like me, and I just go out and get in the workforce. And I didn't last very long there, not even 17 years old. So I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. Just that simple. I joined the Navy, and I remember getting on a train. I always tell this, and I never know why I tell it, but I always tell this, and I'm getting on the train, and I'm watching all these guys hugging their parents, and I'm from a loving family, and I'm getting on the train, and I remember my father saying, "Aren't you going to give us a hug before you leave?" You know, see, I didn't have the rule book that they hand out for life. I didn't know what to do at the right time. I always did the wrong thing at the wrong time, all the time. It seemed like I was always on a step. And so I joined the Navy, and they sent me to San Diego, and some guys introduced me to drinking. And I loved it. And was too young, and so we was only 17 and 18 years old, a bunch of us, so we'd get guys to buy us, and we'd go rent a hotel room, and we'd just get blasted for the whole time. Was that when I was in boot camp, whenever they'd let us home. Right before I was to get out of boot camp, it was just 60 of us, and we'd break and run. I found later on, after I got sober in my 40s, I had pretty good speed. I ran marathons and everything after I got sober. But we used to break and run. And so we'd always run to see who could get back to the barracks the quickest. And this day, I'm leading the pack. And just as I get to the door, there's two swinging double doors like this. And just as I get to the door, somebody was coming from the other side. And just as I went to go like this, they opened the door, and I hit the door edge straight on my face like this, and just hit me right straight in the middle, and just, you know, I'm in the hospital, right? So I'm laying in this hospital, and so I got in this hospital like 7 or 8 days, and you have to take some kind of test out to boot camp to see what they can use you as in the U.S. Navy. I have no education. So they have the Navy handbook, so I didn't have nothing else to do, so I just started reading this book. I read everything in this damn thing. 3 or 4 times, I guess. I don't know how much. But anyway, I wanted to take the test. I made a hell of a score, you know, and everybody was trying to be certain things. So I still hate rejection. So I put in for ship's cook, because it seemed like a good thing. Now, how can you turn down a guy for ship's cook? I mean, let's face it, I mean, nobody. The only thing other than that is the bosun mate that cleans the deck. You know, I didn't want to do that. I want to be up. I didn't want to be the last, but let me move up just a little bit. So I just be a ship's cook. So I put in for this thing, ship's cook, and we get back, and they called my name and come up, and they sent me to communication technician school. So I took my orders and went and said bye, and this guy come over, and I said, "What the hell are you?" He says, "I'm a cook." I said, "That's all I wanted to be, was a cook." He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to CT school, whatever that is, you know." And what it was is you learn Russian codes and all that kind of stuff. And I did that like I've ever did everything else in my life. It was a 42-week school, and I made 36 weeks of it. But I really learned to drink, and it was in Imperial Beach, California. And so the first time we was down, we got liberty, we went out and bought this wine that was less than a dollar a bottle, and I'm the guy they brought back to the base. And so they had an Indian club right there on the base, and so I started just drinking on there. So I went to vodka, and I found out when I drank vodka that I couldn't walk. At first they would start carrying me, but I'd do it so often that they just let me crawl. So everybody else would walk back, and I'd be crawling along beside them going back to the base. My legs wouldn't work. You know, so I said, "God, I got to find something to drink." You know, so a guy told me to scotch, so I tried scotch, and so I put, being from North Carolina, you put Coke in everything. And so I put scotch and Coke, you know. And this bartender said to me one day, he said, "This stuff's going to kill you." So I said, "What do you think I should drink, bourbon?" He said, "I'm not talking about the scotch." He says, "As much as you drink a case of Coke a day, that's going to kill you." That's the first smart man I ever met in my whole life. I met some more later on, but that's the first smart one. And so I started drinking scotch and water, and I'm what the book talks about. I drink for cause and effect. So very simply. Because I couldn't stand the way I felt and who I was. And we come back to the ship. I got out of that school, and they made a radio operator out of me, and we come back to this base and to the ship, and everybody have all these stories, and I'd have to make up one so I could be like you. Because I would remember what happened to me. And they'd tell all these stories about how they did this, and I'd make up something. And they all look at me, and they knew I was lying, and I knew I was lying, and I could care less. When I started doing this, building this wall around me so you couldn't hurt me, And I did it, and I did it really good. And I built it thick, and I built it tall. And so I was going into service, and I was a pre-striper, and most of you didn't even, maybe you know that's just a seaman, you know, and you got to be recommended to go up for another rate. And I had the privilege of having one of the first black officers and in 1953-54, and he wanted to know how come I wasn't a petty officer. And I told him nobody would recommend me. He says, I'm recommending you. I says, good, I'll study. So he recommended me, and I'd take the test, and I'd pass. And he'd recommend me, and I'd take a test, and I'd pass. And pretty soon, aboard the USS Helm, the radio shack had a drunk in charge of it. You know, and what I do is, we worked 8 hours like everybody else, and I'd go down in and get everything going, and we had just grain alcohol we used to cut and all that stuff. And pretty soon, by the end of the shift, they'd have to step over me. They couldn't step on me because I was in charge. I'd be passed out between the teletype machines, and I was getting to the end of my career, and I realized that guys like me would probably have a little trouble on the outside. So I decided to make the U.S. Navy my career. It seemed like a good place for a guy like me, because I figured I was going to have some kind of trouble if I got out of the Navy. We went to Iwakuni, Japan, and the ship pulled in there, and I went over and did the same thing I always did. I went over and I got drunk. And this time I, like a lot of times, I drank too much. There's a lot of things you can do in the U.S. Navy. A lot. One thing you can't do, you can't miss the boat. You can't do that. And when I got up, the boat was gone. You know. And so they put me aboard one of those Air Force crash boats, and we talked to USS Helmer, and as I went up, they said, the old man wants to talk to me. And it was a big joke on the ship, because I was going back before the old man. I'd been up there 11 times, and I'd never got busted. But this time, I guess he'd had enough, and so he took my stripes away from me, and I thought he really did something to me. And he asked me what I had to say, and I told him 16 more days. And that's when he shipped out back to Long Beach, and I was started not to make a career out of this, people that would treat me like this, and I would get out of this U.S. Navy. And I did, and I got locked up with the Long Beach Police the very first night I got out. So I said, I'll get out of California. And so I went to Illinois, and I lasted 42 days in Illinois, and then I went to Florida. And I was going to start a brilliant career of being an alcoholic. And I went to Florida, and I stayed in Illinois until I ran out of money, and I called my father and asked him if he would send me $56. That's how much it cost a bus to go to Florida, and he did. In the book, it talks about that there seems to be times we get to putting it together, and then it falls apart again. And so I went to Florida, and I got a job at General Electric, and it's a good job for a guy like me in a lab. And seemed like my life was going pretty good for about 6 months. And, you know, before I go too much further, I want to tell you something, and I'm not here to try to scare anybody or nothing. I'm one of those people that believe that most people die drunk. That's just the way I believe. That most of us will not grasp on this thing that we are real alcoholic, maybe a little bit, but not real alcoholic, what this book talks about. This is not something that is that will go away if you don't drink. It will not. It's something that is with you, and it's the most devastating thing that, and the most denial thing I've ever seen in my whole life. And I got a good job, and it was just no time, you know. And in the doctor's opinion, it talks about this craving. I could never understand this until what I have to do is, if you're new here, I have to take me and put me in my pitcher. See, at 20 years old in Long Beach, California, they had a bar there called the Old Saratoga right across from that park there. And at 20 years old, I'm in this bar, 6 o'clock in the morning, as soon as they open, and watching these real old people, 40, you know, take this shot and put it in an old-fashioned glass so they can get it to their mouth. And I'm there 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm drinking a glass full and chasing it with beer, and saying, if I was, you know, this is stupid the way these guys are. You know, why don't they quit this damn stuff? But you see, I didn't see the picture. If I look at the picture, Billy Smith is standing in the picture also, but I can't see that. I can just see them. I can't see me, you know. And the book mentions several times about the potential alcoholic. It says that over and over, the word potential. You know, if your drinking is a little out of control, you're probably one of us. But it says most of us will not stop until we've sacrificed everything. I think today that the message comes in, they come in a little bit earlier. Thank God. I have a daughter that I hope someday finds this place, you know. But, you know, it's just that, and when I got this job at General Electric, we were swing shift. There used to be a place where you go get this ham sandwich and a big pitcher of beer. I'd go get this ham sandwich and this big pitcher of beer. 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I had to be at work at 5. I'd go home and take a shower and change clothes. I'd drive 11 miles to the plant. I'd get to the plant and I'd watch the plant as I drove by it. You know, I could not get that darn car to turn in there. It would just keep right on driving, and I'd drive to a bar and I would stop drink and I would start drinking. Then I would find out the days that I didn't go over and get that pitcher of beer and start drinking that beer, that I could go home and take a shower, put on my cars, and go to work, and the car would turn in. You see, I didn't understand that once you put alcohol into my body just says more. Anytime you put my drug of choice is more. Whatever it is you're doing, let's do it. You know, I heard a guy say, you know, take a pill to cure alcoholism. I said, I wouldn't take one. I might take 10, but I'm not going to take one, you know. And so then that's what I had to do is put myself in the picture that I'm what this book talks about, and that's I'm a real alcoholic. I worked at the plant about 4 or 5 years, and then I missed so many days they wouldn't find me, so I finally quit, and I went to work on a fishing boat, and I thought I'd found heaven because this was all drunks, and I got fired. The rest of the guys were just drunks. I wanted to tell them how to run the fish company. And so now I'm in Florida. I have no driver's license. I can't drive and everything because of DUIs. And so I told my mother that I'm going to Las Vegas. And she says, I'll help you pack. And so that's what I did. And I drove across that town over there and come across that mountain, seen them lights. And these guys have been trying to get me to go out there for 2 or 3 years and said, Billy, it's a great place for you. Showgirls and whiskey. God sound great. And I pulled in there and they had me a job as making $8 a day working as a shill, and I found out real fast how to drink in that town. And I found out if you wasn't a bad drunk and you didn't bother people, that you'd go write a 56 Keno ticket, and underneath the Keno ticket they would write about 15 drink tickets. And so it was easy to take $1 or $2 and just stay blasted all day. And I broke in as a crab beater, and I got news for some people here. If you're thinking about going out, being a crab beater is a hell of an occupation. You work 1 hour and you drink 20 minutes. You work 1 hour and you drink 20 minutes, and you work in some of those sawdust joints. In those days, in the 60s, they didn't care if you drank. It was just part of the job. And one day I'm standing on the game and I'm coming apart at the seams, and when I got off, I was running next door to the East Liquor, and Cowboy was my boss, who died of this disease of alcoholism. I said, Jesus, Billy, you're going to wear your shoes out running over. Just go over to the bar and tell the bartender to give you a drink and, you know, tell him you got a toothache. And go over and get you something to drink here and quit running all across the street. So I went up to the bartender and did just like you said. I said, listen, I got a toothache, you know. Pour me some in a water glass. And so I put it in my mouth and give it this shot like I got the toothache, you understand? Because that's what he said too, you know. And inside is what I'm talking about. You see, for guys like me, I can't stand myself when I don't drink. I have a daughter who has this disease, and what, 2 weeks ago, she's in the car, and we had to go do something, and she's telling me that, I said, Jesus, you look a little nervous. She said, well, I've gone 4 damn days without a drink. She said, I feel like killing somebody. I said, boy, I thought to myself, God, if I got a book I'd like you to read, you know. But that's the way I felt. I felt like killing somebody. I just couldn't understand it, that when people didn't drink, how come they didn't feel good. You know, so I got a job at the Sahara, and I got a good job. I got a new wife and a new car. And I don't want to think that I earned this stuff. What happened was I got drunk one night, took some money, and won a whole bunch. And a guy took it all from me, and that's how I woke up with it. Most time I got drunk and did this and woke up with nothing. But this guy took all the money off of me, and it was a lot of money at the time. I gave a lot of it away, but he handed me like $14,000 in the early 60s. That's a lot of money. And so I bought a car and went and see my... And the people I was working for, I got to the point where physically I could no longer function. I'm the dry heaver type. And when I'm talking about dry heaves, I'm talking about where I can't even get up off my knees. I've seen those psychedelic colors long before they ever come out. Those spots used to go before my eyes, and I've seen them things. Now, you know, you know, kiss that thing every morning. It was just a routine. It was like nothing that I was, you know, it was just part of my life. It was part of being an alcoholic. It was part of being a drunk, going through that thing every day. And so now I get to where I can, and I'm the kind of guy, once I start drinking, I don't eat. And so what I did was I did some damage to my stomach, and some people just to her put me in Santa Barbara Hospital. And it was supposed to be a guy down there that could help people like me. And his name was Kenneth J. McNeese, and he's supposed to be an intern specialist. And so now, like 3 days or 4 days before I go down there, I don't have a drink. And so they're going through all these tests, and they put me on baby food and all this kind of stuff. And he asked me, how much do you drink? And I told him, to God's truth, I said, I don't drink at all. I hadn't had a drink for 4 days. I don't drink. You know, I haven't had a drink for 4 days. And he looked at me and said, Billy, if you continue to drink, you're going to die. You're not going to live very long. No mention of AA, no mention of getting help, no mention of nothing. I got in my car, and I'm driving back to Santa Barbara. After I got out of the hospital, I'm driving back, and I just got a new wife, a new car, and a new job, and it seemed like my life should be on the upswing, and it's not. And I'm thinking, I'm 30 years old, you know, and if maybe alcohol is a problem. So if it is, I'll just quit. You see, 30 seemed a little short. I knew guys like me didn't live very long. I knew that. But 30 didn't seem like quite enough. 35, you know, or 37, but 30 seemed like, I just turned 30. Seemed like a little short. So if alcohol is a problem, I'll just quit. And I drove back, and my wife of 4 months, I told her, I said, Inga, if I see you take, if you take one drink, I'm out of here. No more. You want this man around this house, you take one drink, and I'm gone. The day I know why I told her that, if she'd pick up a drink, I would have. So her and I together, ready to drink like I did, we decided that we was not going to drink. Let me tell you about the next 7 years. It's important. Now what you got is, you got a maniac running around with no way to escape. Nothing to buffer and trying to live with untreated alcoholism. Not only did I lose all my friends, I lost all my acquaintances. You know, I became a self-righteous, and the book talks about with the fear, and if you take the fear and then put the cockiness with it, that it makes it worse. And that's what I was. Self-righteous, no good, I'm telling you, absolute monster walking around. And one day, I just tell you what kind of person I was, one day I went out to play golf, and I'm playing golf with these three guys, and I took the driver back, and instead of hitting the golf ball, I hit the steel marker with my driver, and it shattered in my hand. And I turned around, and I said, the first guy says one word, I'll snap his damn head off. And I grabbed the clubs off of the cart that I'd paid $10 for, and walking across this golf course and going, what in the hell is the matter with me? You know, why ain't I like these other people? What it makes me so much different than all these people that I see? How come I don't feel and act like they do? And I'm one of these people that believe if you're anything, angry, lonely, or anything too long, you too will drink. And I went out and they put me in a golf tournament. I was a pretty good golfer, and they put me in this tournament, and I'm playing. I'm moving up in class now. I'm playing with the Mantle brothers and this other guy, and I went out that morning, and just like I always did, about my wife says 8, I say 6, so now I say 7. I really don't know. It's a period of time that I hadn't had a drink, and I walked up that morning, and this is what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. Most of us would never get us the second thought. And I drank a couple of Cokes, and I was playing pretty good. Putts wouldn't fall in too good. And Roy said to me, why don't you have a beer? Sound like a good idea. I didn't even think twice. The hospitals and none of the jails and nothing come up in my mind, nothing. The only thing come up is he offered me a drink, and I took it. And he said, why don't you have another? And I said, why not? I'm going to tell you something. The worst thing in the world happened to me that day. Absolutely nothing. I didn't get drunk. I didn't go crazy. Nothing happened. And I went home and told my wife, I said, look at me. She says, what? I said, I had 2 beers a day. She says, so? I said, look, I'm not drunk. I'm not crazy. I'm not nothing. All them guys are wrong. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. I don't. There's nothing wrong with me. About 3 days later, my next door neighbor said to me, he said, I hear you had a beer at the golf course. Why don't you come over and have some? I said, I'll be right over. And I had four. And nothing happened again. I said, see, I made a mistake. I'm not really an alcoholic. I went to work that night and I called my wife and I said, listen, I'm going down to my old hangout, a plush horse, and have a few and I'll be home. And I didn't make it home. And I spent the next year and a half trying to drink four drinks. I didn't get it on, but I gave it my best shot. And this time, everything had changed. You see, I'm one of the luckiest people that there is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Luckier than most. I have had enough experiences in my life and learned enough lessons that I may, maybe through the grace of God, I won't have to go back out and do that again. I was a daily drunk for 12 years. And then I was a periodic for 10 years. So I tried that. The book says that I will have no defense against the first drink, except in rare cases. This defense must come from my higher power. And that's what happened in the morning. I had absolutely no defense. And now this thought of suicide starts to enter my life. And now I'm thinking, I don't want to do this no more. I'm tired of this thing called life. It's too tough. It sucks. Every morning I get up, I got to go through this puking and all this stuff. I don't want to do this the rest of my life. What if I was to get unlucky and live to be 70? Are you serious? Let's get this thing. And now I'm standing out in that front yard and I'm thinking about ending my life. And I got real lucky. The lady I was married to had as many problems as I had in a lot of areas. Gambling in all kinds of areas and drinking like I did. And she went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, she went to Gamblers Anonymous to help the gambler. Then she went to Alcoholics Anonymous and told me later she went to see if she could get me sober. But I didn't follow. I don't follow good if you're going to those kind of places. You know, so she went to Alcoholics Anonymous in July of 1975 and she asked me if I would go to Al-Anon. And I said, what the hell is Al-Anon? She said, that's where they go to learn to live with their spouse who drinks. I said, hell, I'll do that for you. So I went to this Al-Anon meeting and I met my sponsor's wife and these old biddies wanted to talk about my drinking. And I can tell you that I didn't last in Al-Anon very long. I did not stick in Al-Anon. I said, well, I have none of this. But she did say one thing to me, Billy did, that really made sense to me. She asked me a question that I couldn't answer. She says, just how important is your drinking to you? And I couldn't answer that. I really didn't have an answer for that. And I walked out of that and I said, you know, one more time I didn't really care because I didn't really fit there either. And so she kept going and now I'm thinking daily, on a daily basis now I'm thinking suicide. Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us how to live. And all I'm thinking about now is dying. It's amazing the way my mind had changed. You know, the fun was gone out of drinking. You know, I don't know about you, but I had come to the jumping off place and not knowing that. You know, I might start drinking and the more I drink, the sober I get. That's the worst when nothing happens. And you're trying your best to get something going and you're drinking and people are watching you and nothing's happening. And I mean, it's like the most emptiest thing I've ever felt in my whole life. Not even alcohol works anymore. No friends, nobody, nothing. I love to talk. Now, I sat in this bar for 10 years. There's a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous now, 13 years. She says, in 10 years, he never said hello to me. The only thing I did was I drank. And so now this thing is not working. I picked up a paper one day, and I seen this 18-year-old kid. They have a tour there where you go watch the dam, and they show you how my thinking had gone. They was all lined up to go see the tour, and he stood up on the dam. He was 18 years old. And he said, I'll give you people something to remember this tour by. And he dove off the dry side, you know. And I thought to myself, how neat. He finally did something to leave a mark in this world, you know. I said, well, maybe I ought to try that, you know. At least you'll be famous for something, you know. Then I used to have this thought all the time where somebody always broke into my house, and I always got him, and I always died. And it's like once in my life I did something. Because I was 40 years old and felt like I had never did anything. And my loving God must have said to me, maybe he's ready. And I'm sitting in my front yard thinking about taking this 9mm and putting it in my ear. I won't tell you about this 9mm. They took it away from me, and I was 8.5 years sober when they get it back. That's how well I was wrapped when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I'm standing in the front yard in 1975, and if you're new here, this is what I want to tell you. This is the reason that these rooms and these conventions are so important to me. My first meeting was the 1975 roundup of Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I had no intentions of going. The lady I was married to at the time asked me to take her to a dance, and I said I would. She had something I wanted. There was not much going on around my house. I figured if I take her to a dance, something might happen. So I took her to this dance, and I got real lucky, and I walked into this room, and some of the guys that I had missed from my drinking was in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially the one guy, Tommy Muldoon, God bless him. Because, I mean, this guy was a real orangutan. You know, we went to a Christmas party. You know, he did it on the Christmas tree. You know, he was my kind of man, you know. He was always going in and out of jail, and he was there, and he said, Billy, we are glad you're here. And I want to tell you what I told him. I said, hold it just a second, Tommy. I'm just with her. She has the problem. I went to that meeting that night, and then I went to the meeting the next morning, and I went the whole weekend. I didn't miss a meeting. And I remember about two or three things that were said at the meeting. And the one thing I remember, a guy named Tom O'Sullivan from North Carolina, I just happened to be where I was from, and he said that he was the town Dennis McKean, the town drunk. And the only person that would have anything to do with him more was his mother. And he had to get up one morning and watch her die. And he said, if she would have waited till night to die, that way he could have been a little drunk and could have been a part of this thing. But he had to stand there and go through this thing and feel nothing. And that's the way I was. I was sitting in this room and feeling nothing. And I hadn't felt anything for the last 25 years of my life since I made this great commitment that I could not keep to this God that everybody was talking about, that I no longer would even take to you about. The only time I went to church was a Catholic church, because I know if you go on Easter, you could wind up going to somebody's house and eating. So that's what I would, the only time I would even think about going to church. And so I said that morning, and they had a countdown there just like they have at these other meetings, and my wife is sitting beside me, and this room is full, and I got to see this same thing at the last meeting with another guy, and he did the very same thing I did. And I told him, I said, pal, I'm your man, sitting at the same table as Hope for You. And what she did was she kept punching me, because they give a big book to the guy with the least sobriety. And so she says, hold your damn hand up, bam, bam, and she's popping me. And I said, I ain't gonna, he's got 7 days. She says, you got less than that, hold your hand up. 4 days, you got less than that. I said, I ain't holding my damn hand up, so you can forget about that. And so they give a big book to another guy, and I sat there this last Thanksgiving with a guy that had won the big book, and then after it was all over, he sort of wished ahead, and I said, well, it's not one of the requirements. I'm living proof of that. I left that weekend. I didn't think much about it, and Monday, I don't know what I did, but Tuesday, I told my wife, I'm going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. She says, I'll go with you. I said, you do no such a thing. You ain't going with me. You can go to your own damn meetings. You ain't going to hear none of my story out of me, I can tell you that. I done heard these people, they bear all, no chance, pal. There will be none of that around this household. And so I went to a meeting, I went to the Alana Club. And being the kind of person I am, the guy that's always on the outside, I raised my hand and I said, my name is Bill. And I would not say I was an alcoholic. I knew I was a lot of things, but alcoholic I did not want to be. First page on the agnostic, it talks about a boy like me. It says 50% of us are like this, atheist and agnostic. And we hope against all hope that we are not alcoholic. And that's what I hope. I had a lot of heat on me from a lot of things. So I figured if I hung around in Alcoholics Anonymous for a little while, it would take the heat off. And it did just that. But what happened to me was I showed up a lot. And I was there like 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm raising my hand, they're hauling for newcomers, and I raise my hand, and my name is Bill. And they'd all look at me. I know what they're going to say. Dave's going to say it. I thought, screw you. You know, I ain't saying it. And so finally, right before the 30 days was up, I raised my hand, and I figured, and now this is the truth. What I was afraid of, that was you was going to, not because I want to be an alcoholic, or thought I was an alcoholic, but I was afraid you was going to ask me to leave. I didn't know you could do that. You know, I thought if you wasn't an alcoholic, you couldn't be there. You know, and so I was afraid you was going to ask me to leave. So I raised my hand, and I said, my name is John, I'm an alcoholic. You know, and it wouldn't come out, and I didn't feel it, and I knew I wasn't. I knew there was a lot of things wrong with me, but that wasn't one of them, you know. What I didn't understand was the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that drinking was but a symptom of all these underlying fears that I have. And fear controls 90% of my life. You know, and I didn't know that. So what happened was I started showing up a lot, and it was two old boys that took a liking to me. And they started talking to me. And they started coming over my house. And they seemed they wouldn't let me out of my sight. And I was just going to meetings and not drinking. And I did that for a long time. And that's still lonely. And I'm still not a part of. And I didn't celebrate my first year. At 9 months sober, I was going to an AA meeting, and I walked into a bar, my old beer bar there, and walked in and ordered a drink. I went in for a pack of cigarettes. This loving God I have in my life is the greatest paymaster I've ever seen in my whole life. It says this book is written that we must find the spiritual, the whole book is written that we find this higher power, the spiritual malady, which means the spiritual disease. And we straighten this spiritual disease out, and the mental and the physical straightens right out. But we must straighten out this mental malady, this mental disease that I have. And I walked in this bar. This body had never walked in there and ordered a pack of cigarettes. It always walked in there and ordered a pack of drink. You know, it never said cigarettes. I always went in and ordered a drink. And it happened to be the one bartender in town that knew I was off this stuff. And he said, Billy, I thought you was off this stuff. And I started shaking. I said, Jesus, Bob, I don't want to drink. I want a pack of cigarettes. I'm going to a damn AA meeting. So he handed me the pack of cigarettes, and I went in. And I want to tell the newcomers this, because I think it's important. It's certainly important to me. I went and told a guy, and he said, oh, it's nothing. Maybe not to you, sucker, but it sure is to me. So I went and told another guy, and he said, oh, it ain't nothing. And I said, well, maybe not to you, dummy. So I went and told this other guy, and I said, you ain't gonna believe what happened. I went in, and he says, come on, let's go have some coffee. And 3 hours later, he's telling me, Billy, you have an alcoholic mind. And it went in there and did what it always did. That's the reason you have to stay inside. And what it did was, it showed me how vulnerable I was. Now, you got to understand something. I am still not an alcoholic. I'm still not one of you people yet. I'm just hanging out. And so I kept going to meetings. I went to one meeting, and one day I woke up. Not only did, you know, I had gone from suicide to homicide. I no longer wanted to kill myself, but I wanted to kill a lot of other people. So my thinking was, you know, that I figured I'd just go to meetings. And one day I woke up, and this mind had taken off like it always was. And the Lana Club opened at 10 o'clock that morning. And this is for the people that... I love what Nancy says, that she's willing to go to any lengths. I didn't know I was willing to go to any lengths, but I was. And I went to the Atlanta Club at 10 o'clock in the morning. I left that night at 11 o'clock. And the only reason I left was because they run me out. But I didn't drink that day. And I'm going on this, and I'm going to these meetings, and every time I share, I haven't told the truth yet. You know, one time they talked about the fourth step, and I sort of, I don't remember what I said, wasn't too profound. Because about five people come up to me after me and said, told me to keep coming back. You can always tell when you're bullshitting, they'll come right up to you. Don't go away. You know, if you hang in here, the miracle can happen to you. It might not, but, you know, but don't go away. Give us a shot at it. And that's what I'd like to tell you tonight. If you still got that hole in your gut, the miracle can happen. But it says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, and I'm the sometimes slowly. I did about one step a year. Well, about 18, 19 months sober, and, a friend of mine called and asked for help. And he was my running partner. If you could use it, shoot it, drink it, smoke it, stick it, stuff it, he had did it and dealt him most of it. And so I know he needed help, and so for the first time in my life, I tried to help somebody without expecting anything in return. And what I did was, I had been told by people, don't help your close friends. So I called a total stranger and told him I had this guy that needed to have some help. And I kept my mouth shut, and I drove the car. We drove him to a detox center, and he dried up for like 7 days, and I started carrying the meetings. He had a scholarship at the University of Oklahoma, not because he's an athlete, because he was so smart. After 4 months in the program, he had a better pitch than me. Pissed me off. Only thing is, he was lying. He was going home smoking this crap and doing this kind of stuff and going to meetings and laying all this stuff out. You know? And I go to this guy called Catfish John, and I'm telling this John, I said, you know something? I will get his attention because I'm going to break his damn nose. He said, better listen. Maybe God has no intentions of Tommy ever getting sober. Maybe he's put him in your life just to help you. And so one night I went to the big book group, and I'm carrying this Tommy around everywhere, and I'm going trying to find anything that will make this guy realize he's an alcoholic. And you have to understand something. I'm not one yet. But I know Tommy is. I mean, anybody knew that. Like they knew I was. But I didn't know it yet. And it's not important who knows it. It's only important that I know it. When I introduce myself and I say I'm an alcoholic, I don't say anything any more important than that. I can't say nothing more important than that for a guy like me the rest of the night. And so when I took Tommy in there and I found this big book study group and I found out it was on more about alcoholism, I said, we got one for Tommy. So I buttered him up and away we went. Now, if you remember my story, I told you I stayed sober 7 years on my own. I had in my mind, if you could do that, you could not be alcoholic. No alcoholic could go that long without a drink. Any dummy would know that. They've written a big book for all of us. Your story is in there. You must read it. It is in there. And I'm telling you, I love what these other speakers said. This book continues to change so much. When I go to speak anywhere, there's certain things that I do, because the last thing I want to do up here is get up and hurt one person. A month before I go speak, I'm a poker player. I'm an excellent poker player. I don't do anything negative. I do nothing but read, and I just meditate and work out and run. I even watch the food I eat and everything, just to show that maybe I can help the one more person that helped me. And so I took Tommy to this meeting, and we went in, and just loving God, and is just, he just watches me like a hawk, and I love it. I just didn't know he was doing it, but he just watches over me, and guess what? The secretary didn't show up. How about that? Big book study group. So I go, listen, since it's like five newcomers. So I said, since we got five newcomers here, why don't we read more about alcoholism? So I told him what I was really thinking. I said, listen, I got this dummy here that don't realize he's an alcoholic. Let's see if we can make this guy realize he's one of us. And so they said, that's a good idea. And they passed the big book around like they always do, and you read a paragraph. And guess what part I got to read? I got to read about the guy who stayed sober 25 years. He was an extraordinary man, that's me. And he was interfering with his business, and he quit drinking, and he retired, and he put on his smoking jacket, and within a very short time he was in the hospital, and in a very short time he was dead. And the light turned on. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Once you take that cucumber and turn it into a pickle, ain't never a cucumber again. It's a pickle forever. And that's what I was. That night I become a pickle. And it was a real relief. I walked out of there, and when you do the steps, I'm one of them people believe if you do it thoroughly, like this book says, there should be some kind of feeling when you do this step. And I walked out of there knowing what I was. Tommy never got sober. Tommy still calls me. He did good for a while, but he got on near beer. Started that drinking, you know, and I said, you know, you're playing with your goddamn head and it don't work that good anyway, you know, and this other stuff, you know, and I got these friends now that drink this stuff that's non-alcoholic. Are you kidding me or what? You know, if it don't do something, let's don't do it. You know, if we're going to get down to the business, let's go and quit playing ourselves, you know. It's like masturbating. Go get the real thing. Knock it off, you know. Leave it alone. You're playing with your life. We're not talking about something that will go away when you leave this door. If you walk in here with alcoholism, you will leave with it. You see, maybe you're like me. Maybe you didn't have alcoholism when you come in the door. You see, I called alcoholism inside these rooms. Until then, I was just a drunk. And everybody on Fremont Street knew that. I used to walk up and down Fremont Street. Bobby Darrell's one of the closest friends I got. And one time I had everything I owned in the carnation box. And as I'm walking down Fremont Street, I said, you would have think, a guy would think that this is as bad as it could get. Bobby says it could have got worse. You could have got a smaller box. You know, but we don't see the picture, you know. And so I took Tommy, and Tommy just went on with his thing, and he called me like not too long ago, and he's still having some problems. So now I'm an alcoholic, and now what am I going to do, right? I got a good friend. I just come back from Florida 2 weeks ago, and this is what she said. She says, at 4.5 years sitting in these rooms, every fiber in her body says, I'm an alcoholic. So why don't I do the rest of these things that this book talks about? And so once again, I was going to use this self-knowledge crap and this osmosis, and you guys was going to make me happy. And I was not going to get a sponsor, and I was not going to do none of these other things you said. Okay, so I'm an alcoholic? Fine. I'll go to the meetings, and I'll do that, and I'll put my dollar in. I'll even have to clean up after the meetings, but I ain't doing none of that other crap. You know. And so I'll come out of that triangle club one day, and once again, I was pushed up against the wall. You ever went up to a person and asked them what step you're working, and you had them, you know, you had them saying, oh, I'm on the fun step. You ever had anybody tell you that? Not me, pal. You know, when your butt is in a crack, you know, and that's the way I work. When it hurts so bad, I will go do something. And so I'm walking out of this triangle club this day, and I still know that I'm not like you. So once again, I've come to a jumping off place. I got really lucky that day. There was an old boy behind me, an old guru in AA, that they talked about that had good luck working the newcomers. And his name was Ted Davis. You see, what was destroying me in these rooms was these ABCs that you read every day. It says that God could and would if you were soft. Not me, pal. I know where I'm going, so I'm not going to do this. I might know my life is powerless over alcohol, but I ain't turning my life over to no kind of God. You can take that and worry it. And so what I did was I turned my life over to Ted Davis. And I turned around and I asked Ted, and I said, Ted, will you please be my sponsor? Because I knew if I left that club that day, I was dead. I knew that I could no longer do this thing and be apart from everybody else in the room. I still felt like I was lost on a different planet. And I turned around. Before he could say no, I figured I'd throw a little shot in, you know. I said, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. Wrong thing to say to Ted Davis. And this is what he said to me. And this is what I say to people that ask me. He said, Billy, it will be an honor to be your sponsor. And I can tell you, standing at this podium, it's an absolute honor to sponsor anybody. Does anybody think that you would have anything to offer that will make them a better life? And what Ted Davis did for me is what I try to do for the people I sponsor who got me involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. So he said to me, you got to go on a 12-step list. I said, Ted, geez, you know, what the hell am I going to tell a newcomer? He said, your job is to get him to a meeting. I said, but Ted, what am I going to tell him? I said, I'm crazy as hell, and you know, took me 18 months to throw hours an alcoholic. He said, God, they'll love that. Tell them that. I said, well, you know, I'm screwed up and I'm scared and everything. He says, tell them that. They'll like that too, you know. He said, don't try to tell them something that you're not. Don't try to give away something that you don't have. So I went on a 12-step list, and I got involved in a click. I told my sponsor, I said, these people are awful clickish. He said, they sure are. Find a good one and join it. So I found this click, and what they did was they was involved in AA, and I got my first job in Alcoholics Anonymous at a picnic. After the picnic, they handed me a rake. Told me to clean up the garbage. You know, I thought that was a little bit low for a guy like me, but I did it. You know, and then when I went on vacation, I came back, they made me the steering representative of the group, and they volunteered me for Treasurer Central Office, and they kept volunteering. When I come back, they said, we knew you wouldn't mind. You know those AA elections, you know what I'm talking about? Don't you just love them? I nominate Billy. All in favor of it? You're it, Billy. You know. Thank God for those AA elections, because left there, I would sit there and died. So people knew that, and so they did for me. My God works through people. I get on my knees every morning. I never miss a morning. I have a lot of thank yous during the day. And before I come up here, I go back in my room and be by myself and meditate and do my prayers. You know, but my God works through people. I've never talked to Him direct. He has showed me through you the things that I have learned in this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. So now I'm getting real spiritual around there, and a guy come up and asked me to sponsor him, and I told him he didn't want what I had, and I went on 15 reasons telling him why I should not be his sponsor, and I walked away, and as I walked away, Ted said, "Come here a minute." I said, "What do you want? How come you tell him you wouldn't be a sponsor?" I said, "Ted, I don't have enough to sponsor." He said, "Go over and tell him it would be an honor, just like I told you." So I went over and told the guy it would be an honor. He said, "Now, this is going to be good for you, because this guy's going to ask you questions, and you're going to have to look him up in the big book, because you don't want to hurt this guy." And so naturally, I had this guy, and I was his sponsor about 10 days. He figured it out that I didn't have a whole lot going for me and went and got him a real sponsor, which is all right. It got me started. At 5 years sober, we all get this script when you walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Earl talked about it, and Sally talked about it, and Eddie talked about it. Some of the scripts read a little different than others, you know, but we all get it, you know. Divorce, IRS, marriage, divorce, lose a job, you know. And the first 2 years I was in the program, nothing happened to me. And God says, it's time to let the kid grow up. And it started. And the next 5 years of my life, it would be constant, one thing after another. I have a daughter now that's 23 years old, that's been on drugs and alcohol. If you can name it, she has done it. She's not even been on alcohol and drugs since she was 14 years old. At 15 and a half years old, I'm standing in my front yard and I'm doing what I think is the right thing, I'm not sure. And she's got all the things in her sack, and she's 15 and a half years old, and she's wanted by the Metro, Las Vegas police. And she says, "Dad, I have 25 cents. How can you kick me out?" I said, "I'm not kicking you out. Go in there and pick up the phone and tell the police where you are. And I'll back you all the way. But you can't stay here and be wanted by the police. So go in there or pick up your clothes and start down the road." The disease of alcoholism let her pick up the clothes and start down the road. She's crying and I'm crying. And I can tell you, standing up here, I don't feel guilty. I don't feel good about it, but I certainly don't feel guilty. Everything happened to her that I thought would happen to her, except she didn't get killed. She's a gorgeous lady. And she got raped and everything after her, and she run with the crowd. And at 18 years old, she come back. And she says, "I'll go by the rules." And I said, "First of all, go get a job." She said, "Dad, I'm living in a car. And I'm taking showers at pools and stuff." I said, "I never taught you none of that stuff. Go get a job, and once you get a job, you can come back." She come back, she had a little job, paid for it on something now. I said, "I'll tell you something. You have to work that job for 1 year." I didn't realize the job was that bad. I wouldn't have said that, but once I give my word, I usually don't go back. And when she had that job for 1 year, she come in, she says, "I quit this morning." This morning is October the 26th. It's been 1 year. And so she quit, and she started doing the same things, and I had to put her out again. Today she's 23 years old. She lives right around from me, and she's still trying to function with this thing called alcoholism. At 5 years sober, I went through a divorce. I had a lady that has another disease, and it's called Gamblers Anonymous. And she played a game called 22. If she'd played 21, I would have been in great shape. But she played 22. And she blowed over way over six figures, money that I had. My sponsor, I've always been able to make money. And she blowed it. And I said all kinds of bad things about her and told everybody. And I had everybody in AA on my side because she was a bitch. And I was letting everybody know it. And cut the divorce. And a year later, I'm sitting on my sponsor's bed. And my ex is in a mental institution. And I'm telling my sponsor that I'm going to marry her again. And his wife looked at me and said, "Billy, they have the wrong one locked up. They should turn her loose and lock you up." Says, "You got no business going back there." And so I said, you know, and I give them this thing, and when an alcoholic wants something, forget about it. When you get to the point where, should I take a drink or shouldn't I take a drink, it's way too late. Way too late. You go pick the drink up, and when an alcoholic wants something, he's going to do it. And I went back and married her, and I built up another big bankroll, and she did it again. another six figures down the drain. And so now this time I'm going through the divorce, and she realizes, and now she doesn't want to give it to me, and everybody else gets divorced in 2 weeks, and Las Vegas took me 8 months. And my sponsor told me, he said, do whatever you have to do. But he took me over to my house and said, sit down, we're going to talk. He said, this is what you're going to do. Had a beautiful home in the valley, paid for. Everything I owned was paid for. She said, no cash, but this house I'm paid for. My sponsor says, give it to her. I said, Ted, you're crazy as hell. She's blown over $300,000 in due time. She's had her half. You know, I'm supposed to get something out of this. He said, Billy, money will never be your problem. Never. Do what you have to get out of this marriage and get on with your life. But he says, let me tell you something. This loving God you have in your life is watching you. So go through this thing the way you're supposed to. This time, don't say anything bad. Put the principles of this program in this divorce this time and see how it works. He says, because if you do it really good and put these principles, maybe God won't let you do this again. Boy, that rung a bell. I said, I don't want to do this no more. So whatever you tell me to do, we'll do. And I did it. And I like to tell you, there's been 6 years, and I go over and mow the yard, and we're great friends, and we have coffee. It's important because we're both the parents of this loving daughter. And I don't say anything bad about her because I want to tell you something. You see, I forgot the one thing that was the most important thing in my whole life. This lady took me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I seem to forget that. You see, I'd like to change all this thing, but I don't want to change that. But you can't change the picture, you see. If I change one thing, I have to change it all. If I wasn't married to her, you know, it's God's hands and not mine. So it all worked out just the way it was supposed to. And so at the end of 7 years, and I did about one step a year. After 7 years, it seemed like my life was going, after 10 years after that divorce, I went and got a little apartment, and a one-bedroom apartment, and I got fired from a job that I had for 17 years because they liked me better as a drunk than as a guy that was a maniac. And so I went and took a job, one of the worst jobs in as far as my business goes. Took a box job at the Riviera and just sort of cool my feet. And I used to walk through Caesar's Palace, and I used to tell myself, I know much as much this business as all these guys do. But the only thing is they don't hire drunks. And so I went in there one time and asked them would they be interested in my service, and they said they'd be more than glad. And so about 8.5 years ago, I went to work there. And you see, when losing these jobs and all this kind of thing, what seemed like the worst thing in my life, if you just stay sober and believe in these people, if you stay sober, you will see that it's the best thing ever happened to you. You see, when I went through this divorce, I thought it was the worst thing ever happened to me. You know, I tell Inga, I said, you're a great lady. You really are. You're like a good bottle of whiskey. You're good for some of my other guys, but you're death for me, you know. You know, but we get along good, and that's the way my life is. I don't have any kind of problem looking back and blaming anybody no more because it's not their fault, you know. So at 10 years old, I went to work in there, and this is what happened. Being the alcoholic I am, they promoted me so fast, I almost lost my job. I almost lost it. I couldn't take it. They kept wanting me to do this and do that, and they offered me $10,000 and $12,000 raises, and I'm turning them down. So now they started thinking maybe I'm stealing something. You know, why would you turn it down? And I said, listen, I'd give them this thing. Well, I'm just happy doing this job that I'm doing. And I said, well, we want you to know. So I finally made up my mind, and I started getting promoted. And like my sponsor said, money's never been my problem, and it's still not. At 13 and a half years sober, I don't know exactly what happened, but somewhere I got off base, and the session to drink came back. Now, I don't know, but that's all I thought about for about 2 or 3 months. I go to work, and they got them beautiful cocktail waitresses come around, and, you know, they got them little outfits. If you've ever been in Caesars, they got the biggest you've ever seen, you know. And that's what I always see, and I no longer could see that. All I could was see the drink. And so one day I'm getting ready to leave my house, and this thing is driving me crazy, and I'm starting to talk about it. And again, I went to a meeting, and there was a guy there 13 and a half years sober. And he said, you know, he's 13 and a half years, the insanity came back so strong that he drank. I said, damn, he's from North Carolina, and I'm 13 and a half years. And I come in, I was getting ready to leave my apartment one day, and the phone rang, and it was a central office, and said, we got a 12-step call for you. I'm still on the 12-step list, and I have been for the last 15 years. And so it's in Henderson, so I said, okay, I'll take it. And so I called the guy and talked to him, and he asked me if I would bring him a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, boy, I got me a good one this time. This guy's ready. All right. So I went and got a brand new big book, and I signed it like I always do and wished him good luck and put his name in. And I went up, and I went into this alcoholic house. You know what it looks like? There's two kids on the couch, about 7 and 9, and the house is all tore apart. And a guy had just got out of prison for 8 years. And he said to me, Billy, they told me that you know where it is. And I said, no, what part is? Where I can read it. He says, you brought the book. And I said, yeah, here it is. You show me in there when I get ready to drink, and I'll read it, and I won't drink. And he floored me because I thought he was fooling with me. But now I realize he's serious. And I said, listen, I'm getting ready to go to a meeting. Why don't you go with me? He says, I got a better idea. Why don't I call you when I feel like to drink and you tell me and I won't drink? And I'm looking around these kids and everything. I said, I'm going to a meeting. Why don't you go with me? I said, it's not far from here and I'll bring you back and we can take the kids. He says, you know where it's at. I said, I don't. But I said, we got a room where I went to that seemed to have good luck with people like you. I said, why are you so determined for me to say? He says, because on my probation, if I drink, I go back to prison. And he says, I cannot not drink. I said, please go to a meeting with me. He says, I can't do that. I said, what have you got against Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, I tried it, and it didn't work. I walked out of that house, I never felt this bad in my whole life. I said, I'm quitting this shit. I'm not doing this. 12-step work no more. I've had enough of this crap. You know, all I do is I feel bad. I don't ever feel good. I don't seem to help anybody, and I'm tired of this junk. And I went to the meeting, and I sat down in the meeting, and they said, what the heck's the matter with you? And I said, none of your business. You know, and then my friend came over, and I told him what happened. And I went to work that night, and I walked in, and all the cocktail waitresses had boobs again. I no longer wanted that strength that I thought I wanted, you know. And so that's the way it's been. This loving God that I have in my life has put people in my life continuously that it's been unreal. My thing is, and what I believe is, that if you're uncomfortable here long enough, if the magic doesn't happen for you, I'm afraid that you'll go back out. I woke up about 7 or 8 years sober, and it seemed like the whole world had changed. And I went over and told my sponsor. And my sponsor picks up the big book like he always does. And if you have a sponsor that don't know the big book, get you another one. You know, and he sent in and he showed me, he says, you will cease fighting people, places, and things. You will recall from this alcohol, it will not be a problem in your life. And so that's what sort of happened. I sort of, you know, took my thing. And the thing about it, it was the first time in my life that I was really comfortable in these rooms. I felt a part of for the first time in my life, and I have ever since. There are certain times that I have a little feelings of thing, but a guy told me, you see, I did what I was told. And early on, if you're new here, I asked a lot of questions. You know, I'm standing in the ditch one time. I'm about a year sober, year and a half sober, and they're starting a triangle club, and my, maybe 2 years sober, and my sponsor had me doing the job of digging the ditches. You know, I was my job in June. It's about 112 out there in that desert, and I'm digging this ditch, and I got this old-timer there, you know. Naturally, he's up on the ditch, probably drinking iced tea or something, and try to stunt these old-timers. So I'm digging this ditch, and this thought come to my head, and I said to him, I said, listen, you tell me that a cold beer wouldn't taste good right now. Just tell me that. And he said, Billy, I would never tell you that. I said, see? He said, I want to ask you a question. What was the 15th one taste like? I said, what the hell are you talking about? I'm just talking about a damn beer. He said, Billy, look, they lose their taste after 4 or 5. Now you're just drinking. You know, back to digging the ditch, you know what I mean? I'm going to wind this thing down. I'm going to tell you this story because my whole life has been that I could not fit. And tonight I fit. I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. But I want to tell you something, that if you still got that hole in your gut, please don't go away. The miracle will happen if you do these things. I went to a meeting Sunday, and a guy said, 4.5 years sober. And he said, I still got this big hole in my gut. God, did I understand that. You know, it seems like it's working for everybody else, and it's not working for me. And I used to tell these guys that. And this is what I've come up with. I don't know if it's true or not, but this is what I've come up with. You see, alcohol had quit working for me years before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just didn't know it. But the truth of it is, Alcoholics Anonymous was working for me, and I just didn't know it. When you're 3 months sober, you're 3 months sober. When you're 2 years, you're 2 years, and you're 5 years, and you're 5 years and all. You know, and I'm sitting in these meetings, and I'm thinking, you know, why should I do all this stuff? I'm watching these people go back out, and all these things happen. And I got real lucky, because I used to ask questions. And I used to pick out people. And I went to this meeting one time, and this guy was different than the other. He was celebrating his fourth year. And God, he didn't have 4 years like the rest. He was nice and calm and cool. He wasn't nutty like the rest of us. You know, so I'm wondering how the hell he got like that in 4 years, and the rest of us are all flakes. So I went over and said to him, I said, Joe, you know, you only got 4 years? How come you always talk and feel the way you do? And he said, Billy, I had 11.5 years, and I went back out. And I thought, why should I hang around you and do all this stuff, and I'm going to wind up drunk anyway? If a guy like Joe can't do it, certainly I can't. And I said to him, listen, Joe, if you got time to tell me, Joe had one lung. He'd lost the other lung in a fire drunk. And this is what that old fart told me. He said, I'm tired. I'm going home. He said, but if you want to hear my story, drive out to the 76 truck stop and I'll tell you. I thought, how the hell could he do that? You know, when a hand comes out, he's supposed to do it, you know. And I said, the hell with him. Who wants what he's got anyway? So I got the next man, and the only thing that was on my mind was Joe. How did he get that 4 years like that and the rest of us don't have it? And so I made the drive out to about 10 miles after 76 truck stop. And this is what he told me, and this is what I want to tell you. And I've got this from two different people. He come off the Bowery in New York. And after a year and a half, he got a job. After 3 years, he got a business. After 7.5 years, he owned 2 businesses. In the 7.5 years, his attitude changed. And he quit doing the things he was doing the first 7.5 years he was in the program. And this is what the old man told me. He said, Billy, I built my sobriety up one day at a time, and I tore it down the same way. From the day I quit doing and stopped thinking the way I did, it took 4.5 years before I picked up the drink. You see, we have something much more solid than we do in all these things they ask you to do. I think your chance of recovery is real slim unless you get into this program and get involved in this thing and become a part of it. Then I think your chance of recovery is just absolutely fantastic. I know the guys in Vegas that do all these things that I do and go to prison and everything. It's the same guys, and they seem to be the ones that's laughing. They drive the biggest cars, and they seem to have the most fun, and they go to Alaska fishing like I do, and to Mexico, and do all these things. I hope that maybe that you can believe me and tell me that sometime it takes a long time to feel comfortable here. I sponsor quite a few people. I sponsor a guy from Brazil. He's sober about 8 months, and he described Alcoholics Anonymous better than I've ever heard anybody describe it. He has a master's degree. He's a huge sucker. Got size 15 feet. He's black. He has a real bad English accent that you can hardly understand. And about a month ago, this is what he told me. He said, I need to talk to you. And we sit down and talk, and this is what he said. He says, Billy, he says, I'm from Brazil. I've been in this country 7 years. I'm black, but I got this real bad English accent. so I really don't fit with a black shirt. He says, just for the simple reason that I'm white, black and you're white, I really feel a little uncomfortable there. Just for the simple reason I'm black. He said, I don't speak Spanish, so I really don't feel comfortable even around the Spanish people. But he said, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel a part of. When I come into the room, I know I'm okay. And that's what you did for me. By me hanging around here long enough, you made me okay. Thank you, God bless you, and good night.
Thank you, Bill.